Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. And welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with John McCarthy, author of Hard Roll, A Paramedic's Perspective of Life and Death in New Orleans. And Michael Allen Zell previews Bloomsday 2017 and catches us up on the new imprint, Crescent City Books. John McCarthy has turned one of the most harrowing jobs in New Orleans into an eye-opening thrill ride of a book. It's called Hard Roll, A Paramedic's Perspective of Life and Death in New Orleans. It's his second book, but I suspect not his last. John McCarthy, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you very much for having me.
So how did you get into this line of work? What was it that made you a medic?
I trace that back probably right out of high school. I joined the United States Coast Guard. And my father was a police officer right outside of Tallahassee, Florida. I was originally planning on following in his footsteps, and he actually talked me out of that because of the way that job had kind of changed him. You know, he recommended maybe that I follow somewhere else. The funny story is I was kind of one of these weird 80s kids growing up that I used to watch a lot of horror movies, you know, and some of the crazy ones, there used to be these little VHS tapes you could rent that were kind of in the secluded area of the video store that were called like Faces of Death, you know.
Whoa.
All these gory things. And I used to watch them with my friends. And my mom actually went to me and said, you know what? You used to like all of those gory horror movies. Maybe you should be a paramedic. You ever consider that? And that was the comment. Every time someone asks me that, I look back and say, that's probably what put me onto this path. So I did a little bit of search and rescue experience in the Coast Guard, got out and was kind of looking for what I was going to do next, and pretty much went straight into EMT school from there, and from there to paramedic program.
Well, you said something in this book that was so interesting, and you said that paramedics are often the forgotten first responders. And thinking about that, that's really true. I mean, why do you think that is?
I think, honestly, that's probably because it's a young profession. You know, your triad of first responders are typically your police officers, your firefighters, and then the EMS personnel, the police and firemen, obviously have been around forever. And EMS, even remotely, what we see it as today, really kind of spawned from the Vietnam War. We had a lot of these guys that were over there, and they were receiving this kind of higher level medical training and were coming back, and they weren't quite nurses, and they definitely weren't doctors, so they kind of weren't really sure what to do with them. And so they kind of began to work in this pre-hospital medical field. You know, car accidents and things like that were on the rise, and there was more of a need for that type of profession. So it really kind of spawned in the 60s, 70s. It's been evolving pretty quickly since then. So I think it's probably just it's the newer of the three.
So what brought you to New Orleans?
Originally, my ex-wife was accepted into graduate school here, and we moved here in the late 90s and went our separate ways. And I met my current wife, who's still my wife to this day. She's a native, you know, born and raised here.
Oh,
and,
that'll get you here.
Yeah, that will, yeah.
One of the things I love about this book is how fully you've embraced the city. And you have that kind of insight into seeing it from a different angle that everybody else might have. So I wonder if you'd read a passage from your book that talks a little bit about New Orleans.
Oh, sure. I'd be honored to. I have lived in a lot of places throughout my life and have come to believe that New Orleans is not simply a place. Other cities and towns are merely locations, spots on a map where people live. Sure, they have their own flavor, their own culture, but that comes from those who live or have lived there. New Orleans is different. While other places are made by the people who live there, New Orleans makes New Orleanians. To assume that New Orleans is merely a place is a mistake that will reveal itself only after she has consumed you. There are above-ground cemeteries full of the mistaken, as well as other places where the rejected tell their tales. Some are born here, while others are drawn in from other locations around the world. Getting here is the easy part. To remain, you must be compatible with the whole. Like an immune system, New Orleans will reject all who do not belong, one way or the other. It is an entity that was created from common chaos, love and hate, joy and sorrow. Those are balances that are always maintained. You'll either love her and become forever entranced by her magic, or you will hate her and she will force you out, one way or the other. I have always viewed this city as some people view God, in that your true devotion will be rewarded, but to question her is to suffer her wrath. She will test you repeatedly. Death, disease, and various levels of tragedy inevitably await her people. But there is also beauty, magic, and wonder to be had by those strong enough to survive the maelstrom. The chaos of New Orleans is often overwhelming to all who live here, but never more so than to those who spend their days trying to bring order to it. Here, medics are tasked with helping New Orleans maintain her balance. It is, without question, more than just a job. To save lives in this city, you have to become a devout disciple of this city. You have to become a part of her being. You must be a true servant to a vengeful and powerful entity. If New Orleans is a goddess, then surely the medics are her angels.
I love that. You know I love that. But these angels can be a little devilish at the same time.
At times, yeah.
And a lot of this book is about your friendship with your partner, Sean.
Yes.
And how important that kind of friendship and trust is in work like this that is often dangerous.
Yes.
And often just shocking and unpleasant and challenging in every way. So talk a little bit about that relationship.
Yeah, that was something I think that really kind of got me through a lot of the tough stuff, you know. Sean was assigned to me. You know, I was kind of the head of the field training officer program with the city. And he was assigned to me as a new hire employee, spring, early summer 2006. He had been an EMT for a little while before that. And he and I pretty quickly hit it off. We have a very similar, weird sense of humor, I think you would call it. We've since become best friends, and now I'm the godfather to his son, and he's like a brother to me. But yeah, getting through those, some of the darker stories that I talk about in this book, it's really difficult, I think, to go through that if you don't have someone there with you to vent to, and also someone who can understand and experience what it comes through. So having that kind of devilish sense of humor.
He's got crazy eyes, man.
He does,
yeah. These pictures, they make you want to laugh.
Yeah, he definitely makes me laugh. But I can't credit him enough for just being there. I think that's maybe the biggest thing, is just having someone who's there and who can give you their ear, you know, whenever you're kind of having a little bit of a difficult time, and who can kind of read it whenever you don't feel like talking about it. You know, you can read your body language and come to you when you need someone there.
Well, you all faced so many things together, so many terrible things and unspeakable things. Was it hard for you to go back and remember some of those scenes?
Oh, yeah. I did just a quick math. You know, Sean and I were partners for the 6-year span that this book is written over. And that's pretty uncommon for that field to work with the same person for that long. They mix up partners more frequently than that usually. But we ran probably, just my conservative math was over 8,000 911 calls together. And going back in the book, you know, I went with him at first and I was like, well, Sean, you know, you're in this book, you know, every page is about me and you. And he signed off on it, obviously. And I went to him and said, what calls do you think we should include? Because I wanted to write something that would give the reader as close of an experience of what I always call the bipolar nature of this job, where
right.
One call is maybe just gut-slappingly hilarious and the next call is really, really dark. And, you know, I was like, which calls should we include? And he would talk about, there's a story, a chapter in the book where these two kids get shot, you know, they're brothers. And he was saying, oh, you should put that one in there. And I was like, well, wait a minute. I wasn't on that call with you. And he goes, no, you were there. And I said, there's no way I was on that call with you. And he's like, yeah, you were. And he started kind of reciting some of the details that are in this chapter. And the way I explain it, it was like my memory was solid darkness. And then like these little fireworks of just visuals would kind of start to pop up in the corners where I would start remembering as he was talking about this. I was like, wow, I was on that call, you know, and
yeah.
I completely like blocked it out. So a lot of it was repressed, mm-hmm. was probably a good way to put it. And the funny thing was, prior to writing this book, I'd always felt like I was immune to that, you know, being affected by these things. I thought maybe I was, you know, perfectly designed to do this job because in 20 years, I'd never had a nightmare. I never had any layover after a call was over. I was able to put it away and move on to the next thing and
wow.
really be analytical, at least I thought, When I started writing this, that's when a lot of these kind of, I always describe it like in a New Orleans term, is like when your power goes out and, you know, and all the stuff starts seeping out of your floorboards, of your wooden floors of your home. That's what it felt like in my mind. It was a very strange experience. And I think Sean might have actually been a little better than me because he wore his heart on his sleeve a little more during the events. And he kind of seems like he processed this stuff maybe a little bit better at the time. I didn't even consciously realize I was suppressing anything, you know, or I guess it was just a defense mechanism. I'm not sure. But
wow. Well, one of the things you do so well is show how this profession comes into contact with every walk of life.
Sure.
Sooner or later, everybody's going to face a moment where they need you guys.
Yeah. You get to see the best of humanity, and I think way more frequently you get to see the worst of it. And you always use this metaphor of the rock of humanity, you know, that if you lift that up, there's a lot of stuff that crawls around beneath there, and you deal with that a lot. And just darkness is the easiest way to explain that. And it makes you sad for the world sometimes, but it also makes you really happy to kind of play witness to a child being born or truly saving someone's life and seeing how that, you know, their family reacts to that. I mean, so there's a beauty to that, but then there's also the other side of that, you know, where it's the worst of what we as people do to one another.
Dark gifts and bright gifts,
yes,
you know, in a
yes.
way. One of the things that I loved was that you talked a lot about how you do think about your patients after you drop them off at the hospital when you do that. And there's one boy in particular you followed for a while.
Yes, yes. That was a young man who, unfortunately, my son, ironically, just a few days ago, one of his friends, similar story, they were playing with a gun. It went off, and my son's friend died, unfortunately. But the boy in the book here, he was a friend, found his father's firearm, was playing with it, and it went off and shot him. We were able to get him to a university hospital where I say in the book, and see people always laugh at this comment, this is probably one of the best cities in the world to get hurt in.
I know. I was struck by that.
They have a really great staff over there at the university, at the trauma center. And they saved this kid's life. I found out a friend of mine was a trauma surgeon on that. And he said that's a 70% of the time if you have the wound that this kid had, you die from it. And he would have died probably if he would have been the vast majority of other places in the country. And fortunately, we were able to get him there and they were able to save his life. And that was a rare occasion where I actually followed up with a patient over that period of time. I think that was because he was around the same age that my son was. And that was one of your biggest fears of, as a parent, you know, is something like that happening to your child. And they were a family that didn't have a whole lot, you could tell. And it was a really heartwarming experience for myself and then my coworkers and then the hospital staffs and even some of the local businesses around here kind of got behind this poor kid, you know, what he had went through. And we were able to put together a little like gift package for him. And Sean and I drove out to deliver it to his family. His mom was really grateful. And it was nice to see that. Yeah.
New Orleans has a big heart, too.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Now, you're going to be talking at the Mystery Writers Conference this year. And they're always great about bringing in professionals in different fields. So what are you going to be talking about to them?
I think I'm actually going to try to speak to them a bit on kind of what you and I were just talking about is what I consider a subset of humanity. The truth is stranger than fiction approach, where I kind of wanted to give them an insight into what it's like to see and do some of those things and reference some of the stories in the book that I talk about with that. And then also hopefully to give them maybe some insight into the profession of EMS so that maybe they can incorporate that into their writing and their stories and, you know, the psychology of this job. So that's kind of what I'm looking to speak to them about.
Well, the real nitty-gritty is in this book, that's for sure.
Yes.
So we've been talking with John McCarthy, whose new book is Hard Role, A Paramedic's Perspective of Life and Death in New Orleans. You can meet him Saturday, June 17th at 2 at Barnes & Noble West Bank, or Saturday, June 24th, starting at 9 a.m. at the 3rd Annual Mystery Writers Conference at the East Bank Regional Library. John, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, Susan.
'Cause they made a promise and here they come. Someone heard and called 911. And the siren's saying hope is on the way. There's a hero racing to help a stranger today.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Alanzal back to The Reading Life. Michael is one of our hardest-working literary citizens in New Orleans. He manages Crescent City Books, oversees the new bookstore publishing imprint, Crescent City Books. He's the author of the Bobby Delery crime series, and he's the MC and organizer of the annual Bloomsday Celebration, that reading and drinking tribute to James Joyce's Ulysses. Michael Zell, I'm so happy to see you.
I'm happy to see you. Thank you.
So, Bloomsday is almost upon us. So what are the plans this year?
Bloomsday is almost here. This year is going to be a special kind of BYOB, as in bring your own book, bring your own beverage, but I will have books and beverages. This year it's going to be at the bookshop, and there's a great lineup, some familiar faces for Bloomsday, some new people, and as usual, anyone that wants to show up and read, first come, first served, there will be open slots for that.
So tell us about this event. What's the appeal of Ulysses? What's the appeal of observing this day?
Bloomsday, as you know, is really the only international literary event. And there are different versions around the world, but it's all centered on James Joyce's modernist novel, Ulysses, from not quite a century back. And in New Orleans, generally what we've done is get together, read the book, eat, drink. And some books suit very well to be read aloud. Ulysses does, despite the fact that it can be a really tricky book to read. So often people that know what they're going to read prep for that, especially if you've had a drink or so, then the stumbling is a little bit easier.
Yeah. And so this all takes place when? June 16th?
This all takes place June 16th, which this year falls on a Friday, and it'll go on from 6 to 8, give or take.
And it's at Crescent City Books' second location.
It will
their
be
new
on
location?
Barone Street, yeah. So across from the Roosevelt Hotel. So the address is formerly 124 Barone, but just half a block across canal.
And what time?
So 6 o'clock, not quite New Orleansy 6 o'clock, but easing into 6 a little bit.
And Who are some of the readers this year?
Well, I'm happy to say the newest confirmation, so to announce everybody, is Dr. Jerry Ward.
Ah, great.
You will notice this year a focus or slant more toward some poets. Poets always are really good readers, and I know some of us fiction writers sometimes take second hat to poets. They're just more accustomed. So also George Bishop, Carolyn Hembry, those three alone are some of the best readers in the city. Louis Maestros and Jeff Munsterman, who's never read there before.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And you give ordinary folks a chance to read, too.
Yes. So we have the published, the known authors, but then also day of, first come, first served. And it's done as 10-minute slots, and I alternate those so you get somebody that you probably heard of or read, and then whoever comes in that wishes to read. And a lot of people will come in with their own books. I'll have copies of Ulysses there, but people tend to come in with their own books. I don't do it so formally that you need to assign or let me know which part you're going to read. I go under the assumption, and mostly it's worked out just fine, that in a large enough book, that no two people are going to pick the exact same spot. Unless somebody starts at the beginning, then the next person will know that they just don't start at the beginning.
So get your Irish accent ready.
That's right.
So how do you choose the passage you like?
You know what? As it turns out, in the past, I haven't read because there have been enough people to fill the slots. But I guess when I have in the past, I do it sort of the I Ching method. I just flip to a random page, and if the portmanteau, the combined words aren't too crazy, and it seems like this would be an agreeable part, then that's what I go with. I know a lot of readers go either more formally to a specific part they like or something that maybe fits with like their own occupation or whatever else, but I just figured the book is so wide, there's a sea to choose from.
Well, it was so interesting. I remember one Bloomsday when we all sat around a table in the Irish house and you know, pass the book around in some cases, and everybody read two pages.
Right.
And it was so great to have that random page come to you as opposed to having to pick something out.
That was the first time back, I guess, after the storm, the mini marathon, which in 12 hours, I think we got to just over a third of the book.
I know. So, it's just, it would take days, wouldn't it?
It would take a little time.
Yeah. Oh, maybe 24/7. Maybe that's something to shoot for someday.
Maybe that will be something I'll be happy to pass on to somebody else.
Right. Yeah. So what's fun for you about putting this together? It's a bit of work.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a bit. I mean, I enjoy, I guess, the New Orleans connection to the rest of the world, since, you know, everybody's doing it in some fashion, most cities of literary note anyway. But it's kind of fun to piece together a group of readers that typically, if you're setting up an event, don't necessarily have a connection. You know, usually if you set up an event, it's poets of this type or novelists of this type, even if it's a couple people. But in this case, it's kind of anything goes, and I just want somebody to be reading who is going to be a good reader.
And I love that there is a day when all over the world people celebrate one book.
Exactly.
It's very sweet. There's something really lovely about that. Mm-hmm. And you have so many people who love Ulysses. Why do you think they love this book so much?
You know, some books endure and some don't. It doesn't help when you have a holiday that bases the book. But I think the context of it matters. The fact of the date and being when Joyce met the lady that became his wife. The fact that, I mean, in a time of a lot of modernist books since then as well, I think his story personally fits mm-hmm. in. In some ways, that's a good question. Maybe it helps for the sake that you have a book like A Portrait of the Artist that's probably more of a straightforward book. So that can be an entry point. I know for myself, that's the book of his that I read first off. Right. And I didn't want to read Ulysses until I was better able to get it. And so you can kind of proceed into his catalog at different levels as a reader. So maybe that helps. I don't know otherwise.
Well, you know, they say the novel is the bright book of life. There's a lot of life in Ulysses. So,
yes.
In your other enterprise, which is Crescent City Books, how are things moving along there?
You know, we have been busy the last few months with a new enterprise. So Joe and Susan, who are the owners of the shop, have been publishing poetry, international, past and present, mm-hmm. as Black Widow Press for about a decade. And being more of a prose person and knowing that there are really so many great books set in New Orleans, and one would hope some of them also being written that we're not necessarily hearing about, I had pitched them the idea of an imprint focused not only on fiction, but fiction set in New Orleans. So a little different from the Black Widow Press stuff. And I thought they might need to think about that a little bit, but it was an immediate yes. And what I thought would be, at least initially, more submission-driven turned out to be reprints of some really essential books that had just fallen out of print in some publisher situations.
And so what are some of the latest titles?
Well, this whole year, as it turns out, will be David Fulmer year. So Chasing the Devil's Tale came out in April, and Jass just came out this last month. So Chasing the Devil's Tale was actually a Seamus Award winner, and we are reprinting these month after month. And then the new book, one that's been unread before, is called Eclipse Alley. So it all, the year culminates in that new book in the series in October.
I think he was such a smart writer to choose the Storyville era. And I think Valentine St. Cyr is mm-hmm. such a compelling character.
It's incredible. No one had ever done that.
And that,
and they're so well researched.
And that if they had fallen out of print.
And when Harcourt merged, as I understand, just X amount of authors got dropped. And the blurbs for the book are very easy because it's which do you choose, you know, the Times, the Post, the LA mm-hmm. Times. I mean, these were really heralded throughout the country and have international readers too. So that was an easy choice, and I'm glad that it's worked out to proceed. He's planning on the final book in the series, the seventh, will be 2018. So it's been just kind of this ride to move it along. And then the next author that we publish, who is not David Fulmer, will be another reprint. This will be early 2018. Is going to be the long overdue return of A Sound of Building Coffins by Louis Maestros.
I love that book.
Which is really exciting because not only has this been out of print, it's probably the only New Orleans magical realist book. It's easily in my top five. My top five, by the way, is Confederacy of Dunces, Sound of Building Coffins, and the other three kind of move in and out.
Yeah.
This is going to be an enhanced version, almost like a director's cut, in that it, even for people who have read it before, it'll include 100 pages that didn't exist in the Toby Press edition.
Wow.
So it will be a new book.
So what's it like for you to work with an author? I mean, are you editing these books with them?
Somewhat. It depends, you know, how hands-on somebody mm-hmm. wants to be in their own right. But I guess some of what I do is acquisition, and some of it is working with, but then also we have specific people doing layout and design.
Isn't it fun to see 100 new pages of work from an author you like?
You know what? I can't wait. I mean, I've read all the Fulmer books. I've read Louis's book. I can't wait to read the new Fulmer book. I can't wait to read the Maestros book with this extra before anybody's seen that. So that's a perk of the position.
It's like, thank you for this lanyap.
Right.
for all this hard work.
That's a little extra. And I think probably for 2018, we have something else that we're considering that was written by a guy who had lived in New Orleans and is a New Orleans book. And that's, to me, it's not a tricky thing, but when I think of a New Orleans book, the world that any author creates will make a different type of New Orleans book. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the Fulmer books and you look at Sound of Building Coffins, those roughly take place in the same era, but they couldn't read more differently.
Absolutely.
You know, so they're very, very New Orleans books, but they each have their own world. So I guess I'm looking for something that it feels like New Orleans, but it also feels like the author's version of New Orleans at the same time, that there's enough voice, you know, voice is strong with that. So we're open to submissions and we'll see where it leads from there.
So what about your version of New Orleans? What about Bobby Delery and when will we be seeing him again?
I'm working on number 3 right now.
Yay!
And it's just about done. So it will be soon, but I'm not going to define soon quite yet.
Okay.
Yes.
Big smile.
Yes.
That's all
you.
I can say. Big smile from me.
Thank you.
We've been talking with novelist, publisher, bookseller, and all-around good guy Michael Ellenzell. You can see him Friday, June 16th from 6 to 8 when the Bloomsday Celebration gets underway at Crescent City Books, 124 Barone Street. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Olivia Clare signs her short story collection, Disasters in the First World, Wednesday, June 14th at 6 at Octavia Books. The Garden District Bookshop Book Group discusses All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, Wednesday, June 14th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Jean Redmond signs Girl on the Edge of Summer and Perdition, her two new mystery novels, Thursday, June 15th at 7 at Tubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop. Today's guest, Michael Ellenzell, MCs the annual Bloomsday Celebration Friday, June 16th at 6 at Crescent City Books, 124 Barone Street. The Octavia Books Book Club discusses The Sellout by Paul Beattie, Saturday, June 17th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. Today's guest, John McCarthy, discusses and signs Hard Roll, a paramedic's perspective of life and death in New Orleans, Saturday, June 17th at 2 at Barnes & Noble West Bank. Yuri Herrera signs Kingdom Cons, Tuesday, June 20th at 6 at Octavia Books. Tom McDermott plays music and signs his book, Five Lines, No Waiting, Limericks and Sketches, Tuesday, June 20th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. And coming up, the 3rd annual Jefferson Parish Library Mystery Readers and Writers Literary Festival takes place Saturday, June 24th at 9:30 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie, and it's all free. Here's the schedule. New York Times bestselling author Erica Spindler kicks things off at 9:30 with a keynote address, followed by prosecutor and novelist Sal Perricone talking about the wheels of justice at 10:30. Former police officer and attorney Jeff Blue talks about high-speed car chases at noon, followed by a break for lunch. John McCarthy picks things up at 2, talking about Hard Roll, a paramedic's perspective of life and death in New Orleans, followed by a masterclass on pacing by bestselling author Bill Lofelm at 3:30. And remember, all our area libraries have special reading programs going on, not just for young readers, but readers of all ages. So check out your branch library for more information. And here's some good news. The Pinkley Prizes, which honor the memory of Diana Pinkley, longtime crime fiction columnist for the New Orleans Times-Picayune, announced its 2017 winners last week. Louise Penny will receive the prize for distinguished body of work for her Inspector Armand Gamache series, set in Three Pines, Quebec. An Atlanta writer, Trudy Nan Boyce, is the recipient of the prize for debut crime novel for her book, Out of the Blues, which introduces Detective Sarah Ault. The prizes will be presented September 8th at 6 at the Academy of the Sacred Heart, NIMS Fine Arts Center on St. Charles Avenue. Tickets will be available at Octavia Books. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.